Good morning, world. Welcome to Beijing Diary. This is the Sakai Report for Saturday, June 4th, 2022. We're going to start out today talking about the law of unintended consequences. I mentioned it in either the last podcast or the one before, but I thought I should clarify exactly what is meant by the law of unintended consequences. The law of unintended consequences is basically the foundation of political conservatism. The core of American political thought is conservatism. Liberalism pulls against the core. Conservatism is basically tied to the law of unintended consequences. Liberalism tends to disregard the law of unintended consequences. So, what is it? The law of unintended consequences says that the unintended consequences of a given course of action are sometimes, not always, but some of them are contrary to and militate against the intended result. So you have the unintended consequences, the intended result. You have an intended result, but then you have an unintended consequence from that result, which actually militates against the, or from the action, which militates against the intended result. Now, some unintended consequences are meaningless and irrelevant. You know, you didn't expect it, but it doesn't have any real significance. But the unintended consequences, the law of unintended consequences, says sometimes you propose to do something and the unintended consequences from that action actually militate against it. So how do you counteract this? Well, the best way to counteract it is preventively. You move very slowly and judiciously so as to anticipate the possible unintended consequences. And that's what makes conservatives conservatives. A conservative will say, well, this is going to cost more than you think it is. And the liberal says, well, so what? We'll raise taxes on the rich. You know, tax the rich. No problem. Tax the rich. So the best way to give you an understanding of this is just give an example of the law of unintended consequences. When Obama was president, the Democrats decided to change the rules so that the vote for a federal judge would be just a majority, simple majority, 51% instead of two-thirds, or I don't know if it's two-thirds or 60 votes. Now, why would you want, a two-thirds or 60 votes to confirm a justice? Well, because what that does is it sets up a situation where you have to pick people who generally have bipartisan support. It was a long-standing sort of gentleman's agreement among the different parties, between the different parties. I say between because America is not a two-party system by law, but by custom it pretty much is. But anyway, the Democrats and Republicans sort of this gentleman's agreement that we're going to find somebody that we can both live with. And you do that by requiring the two-thirds majority, or 60 votes. I think 60 votes is for cloture. But anyway, they changed it. They changed it to a simple majority. And, of course, the Republicans, you can't do that. Boy, that's, the conservatives are much less likely to mess with those old traditions. But Obama was a very divisive president, probably the most divisive president in my memory. And the biblical character that he reminds me of is Rehoboam, the son of Solomon. You know, they came to Rehoboam, they said, we want to serve you, but we want to have, an understanding. Solomon, his father, had taxed them very heavily. So he goes to the old guys. I can't remember the exact story, but he goes to the old guys and they say, speak to them very kindly. Tell them, don't worry, I will ease the burden for you. And so then he talks to the young guys and they say, tell them my father, well, you think my father was tough, I'm going to be much tougher. And they reacted and he foolishly followed the advice of the younger guys, and the people reacted, and the kingdom was split and never unified again. So Obama was very bright, but young and immature, and You know, we won, so we're going to do things that we want. Well, what was the intended result of changing the approval of judges, federal judges, to a simple majority? Obviously, lots of liberal judges, right? That's what the Democrats intended. We won, we're in power, we're going to do this. They changed it, the approval of federal judges, to a simple majority. What happened? Obama left the White House with 200 federal judge, I think it was 200 federal judge positions still open. No problem. Hillary can fill them. Guess what? Hillary didn't get elected. Donald Trump filled them and a bunch more. And then the Republicans said, well, if you can change the approval of federal judges to a simple majority, we're going to change the approval of Supreme Court justices to a simple majority. The Democrats were horrified. But there wasn't a thing they could say. There wasn't a thing they could say. So the Republicans changed the approval of Supreme Court justices to a simple majority, which is something they never would have done ordinarily. Republicans are more conservative. They're not as likely to make these kinds of radical changes. They just never would have done that. But they did it because the Democrats had done it. Democrats opened the door and Republicans walked through it. So what's the result? What's the unintended consequence? The intended result of changing the approval of federal judges was to a simple majority was lots of liberal federal judges. The unintended consequence, one out of every four federal judges across the federal judiciary is a Trump appointee. 1-2-3 Trump, 1-2-3 Trump, 1-2-3 Trump, all across the federal judiciary. And Trump appointed three Supreme Court justices, and the Supreme Court is now poised to overturn Roe v. Wade. That is the unintended consequence. Would the liberals, the liberal parties, the Democratic Party of the United States, would they have taken that action if they had anticipated the unintended consequence of that action? I rather doubt it. So that's the unintended consequence, the law of unintended consequences. Conservatives tend to pay a lot of attention to it, more or less, depending on the situation. Liberals tend to blow it off. So let's see if we can think of another one. This is a future one. This is a what if. What if all those illegal aliens that the Democrats are rushing into the country, and clearly the policy is designed to bring in immigrants, lots and lots of immigrants. The thinking seems to be that these people are going to grow up to vote Democrat. It's going to change the demographics, and so the Democrats will seal their position in power. But what if those all those immigrants grow up and say, you know, in our country, we don't believe in, you know, a man being able to put on a dress and call himself a woman. And so those all those illegal aliens decide to vote Republican. That would be an unintended consequence. You know what Democrats would be saying? Build the wall. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with that. Now, generally, I know the Republicans are very, very upset about all these illegal aliens. Generally speaking, I don't approve of what the Democrats are doing because they're encouraging lawlessness, and I don't support lawlessness. But generally speaking, immigrants have a good result in a country. Immigrants are generally good for society. So I'm not terribly worried about it personally, even though I don't support lawlessness. Angela Merkel brought 1 million Syrian refugees into Germany. Just incredible. Okay, you guys, that's the law of unintended consequences. We're going to pause for a news break here, and then we'll be back in a few minutes. So don't go away.
President Biden raising eyebrows overnight from Japan, saying the U.S. military will defend Taiwan if China invades.
And now the White House is on cleanup duty, working to clarify those comments as the president also tries to defend his economic policies.
Jackie Heiner joins us live from Tokyo with more. Good morning here. Good, I don't know, evening there, Jackie?
How many hours ahead or behind? It is evening. Good morning to you guys, though, Will, Ainsley, and Brian. You know, the president's statement was a very clear departure from longstanding U.S. policy of strategic ambiguity toward Taiwan. Traditionally, the U.S. expresses support for helping Taiwan defend itself, but we've stayed intentionally vague about whether the U.S. military would get involved if Taiwan was attacked by China. And today, all that went out the window. And the way the question was phrased and posed to the president indicates that Biden knew exactly what he was saying. The reporter said the U.S. has not gotten involved in Ukraine for understandable reasons, referencing Russia's nuclear arsenal, but asked Biden if we would get involved in Taiwan if China attacked.
Willing to get involved militarily to defend Taiwan if it comes to that?
Yes.
You are?
That's the commitment we made.
I was in the room at the time, and I can tell you the cabinet certainly did not expect that from the president. I looked over at Secretary of State Antony Blinken. He shifted visibly in his seat and then was looking at his phone. Minutes later, the White House tried to walk back the president's comments, telling me, as the president said, our policy has not changed. He reiterated our one China policy and our commitment to peace and stability across the Taiwan Strait. He also reiterated our commitment under the Taiwan Relations Act to provide Taiwan with the military means to defend itself. Now, if this all feels very familiar, it is because this has happened before. The president was asked the exact same question about a year ago, and immediately after, the White House had to walk back the president's comments. Today, China's foreign ministry gave a swift response, rebuking and deploring and rejecting the president's comments, warning the U.S. not to defend Taiwan's independence, and saying it'll take firm action to safeguard its sovereignty and interests. And it comes after China expressed anger that the U.S. recently removed language in a State Department fact sheet saying the U.S. does not support Taiwan's independence. I asked the White House how China should view the president's statement after all this, and I was told that this was not a change in U.S. policy. However, this was a major distraction from the launch of this new trade partnership involving 13 countries here in the Indo-Pacific that was launched today, and also undermined the president's other news he made in that press conference that he doesn't think the U.S. is necessarily bound for a recession.
Okay, so lots of discussion there about Biden's policy in the next few days after this, at least on Fox. I don't know about the other networks. But I think the report sounds a little bit sensationalized. You guys ever had buckwheat tea? Picked up some buckwheat tea the other day. First time I've ever had it in China. I have a buckwheat pillow. I don't know if I made this stuff right. I just boiled it in water, but it's good. Anyway, I think the report sounds a little bit sensationalist. All he said was that's our policy. Now, the interesting thing is to me is that they interviewed others commenting on this, and everybody else, they interviewed Pompeo. Well, what Pompeo said, well, I think this might offend China, but then Pompeo went ahead and said something that is much more concerning to China. And you'll notice that in this report, she says that the spokesman for the Chinese Foreign Ministry said that that they will not allow Taiwanese independence. You see, they're not allowed Taiwan to declare independence. And so that's the problem, perhaps, with Biden's statement. What he should have said is the statement from the Reagan era, or Bush. Anyway, the idea is this. You just state, we firmly oppose any attempt by either side to unilaterally change the status quo. Now, Pompeo said, well, the Chinese might be offended by what Biden said, but then he said, Taiwan is an independent country, and you know, that would be much more offensive to China. Let me tell you something. China is not worried about Biden. They are not the least bit worried about Biden. They know he's kind of a doofus, you know. But they're much more concerned about someone like Pompeo. So he actually said, you know, Taiwan's an independent country. We need to recognize that. That is horrendous from the standpoint of diplomacy. But didn't Meng Jiao say that Taiwan was an independent country? No. Meng Jiao said that the Republic of China is an independent country. Let's listen to it. By the way, for those of you who don't know who Meng Jiao is, he's a former mayor of Taipei who became the president of China. And I believe that Meng Jiao understands the nuances of the situation better than anybody. So I really think the Americans should follow his lead. But let me read to you what Meng Jiao has said. His statement on it, he says, I define cross-strait relations in accordance with the constitution of the ROC, that's Republic of China. Under our constitution, the ROC is a sovereign and independent nation. That's the ROC, not Taiwan, okay? Taiwan is an island. Taiwan is not a country. The Republic of China is a country. The best description of the current state of relations across the Taiwan Strait is mutual non-recognition of each other's sovereignty and mutual non-denial of each other's authority to govern. Now, you have to understand that the Republic of China on Taiwan, at least the Kuomintang, the Chiang Kai-shek's party, they consider themselves to be the legitimate government of all of China, including Tibet and Mongolia. They don't just consider themselves to be the legitimate government of Taiwan. So the Republic of China on Taiwan does not just reject China's sovereignty, the mainland's China of sovereignty over, or I should say, the People's Republic of China's sovereignty over Taiwan. They don't just reject that. They reject the Republic of China's sovereignty over any part of China. They believe they are the right China. So he never said, we believe Taiwan is an independent country. He said, we believe the Republic of China is an independent country. So when Pompeo says Taiwan is an independent country, he's basically totally blowing away the one China policy. And that's much more problematic than anything Biden said. I think the one who came the closest is Newt Gingrich. Gingrich actually said what Biden said was right. His staff shouldn't have walked him back. And, you know, although Biden, I think he should have said, as I stated before, we oppose any attempt by either side to change the situation unilaterally, because that clearly includes Taiwan declaring independence. But shouldn't America, as a democracy, support Taiwan's independence? Well, the fact is that under the status quo, they have de facto independence. So, by keeping the status quo, I know it's sort of kicking the can down the road, but it preserves Taiwan's de facto independence without making an issue of declaring independence and nullifying the one China policy. The analogy that I often use is two guys arguing about a dog, and one man says, "There's one dog here, and it's my dog," and the other guy says, "No, there's one dog here, and it's not your dog, it's my dog." And then they both are hit with the realization. They look at each other, and they smile, and they say, "Wow, we both agree there's one dog." That's the nature of the agreement between China and the Kuomintang. They totally disagree about who owns China. The People of the Republic of China says they own it. The Republic of China says they own it. But they do agree that there's one China. That differs them from the Independence Party. I say new Independence Party, it's not really new, but it goes back to, 20 years. But it's been a thing in development for a long time, because the Taiwanese natives are 70% of the population in Taiwan. They're not interested in one China. They want to have just one Taiwan. But the current leader is a member of that party, Tsai Ing-wen. Miss English is a member of that party, and she has been very careful not to declare independence so as not to offend the mainland. But, of course, the mainland will never be at peace with her, because they know that she ultimately supports independence of Taiwan, which the Kuomintang, the KMT, the Chiang Kai-shek's party, officially does not. Okay, but let's continue with Meng Jiao's statement here. Meng Jiao says, for historical reasons, the two sides of the Taiwan Strait still see things very differently, and there is no easy way in the short term to resolve our differences in a manner acceptable to both sides. Our position is to maintain the status quo of no unification with mainland China, no pursuit of Taiwan independence, and no use of force to settle disputes. acting within the framework of the Republic of China Constitution. So no formal declaration of independence. Again, they have de facto independence. They have their own military, they have their own visas, their own government, and so on. Okay, then this is the rest of it. This arrangement promotes peace and stability and encourages the two sides to conduct cross-state affairs in a more pragmatic manner, thereby reducing room for misunderstandings and unfounded perceptions of threat. I believe that when historical conditions are ripe and the overall development of relations has become relatively mature, we will naturally be able to resolve cross-state disputes in a gradual, peaceful manner. Okay, so it's complicated, I know, but it's hard to get. But you know, Americans are notoriously clueless on the nuances of this, and it just seems like everyone who's commenting on Biden's statement is saying things worse than him, except for Newt Gingrich. I think he was pretty close to it, but Rich Lowry I read what he wrote in the National Review, and it was much worse than what Biden said. Okay, you guys. Well, I can't say many more about it now. We're out of time, but I've written about this extensively in my blog. Google Eric's Beijing Diary. Look for the topics link in the top right corner and scroll down through the topics until you find Taiwan, and you can have at it. Okay, you guys, thanks for being with us, and we'll see you next time. This podcast is hosted online at beijingdiary.podbean.com. That's beijingdiary.podbean.com.